on all the logging sales and all the logging that has gone on around us has impacted us greatly on our customary traditional gathering.
A lawsuit to protect Tongass roadless areas. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, the 22nd of December. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a new study reveals Cook Inlet might not be running out of gas, but there's a catch.
While we're not running out of gas, we may well be running out of cheap gas in the Cook Inlet.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Tech Alaska, operators of the Red Dog Mine in Northwest Alaska, delivering jobs and revenues to Alaska for 20 years and now working on the next 20 years. Online at reddogalaska.com. And by First National Bank Alaska, serving Alaskans' financial needs for nearly a century. Member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Environmental and tourism groups, along with the organized Village of Cake, went to court today with a lawsuit to extend nationwide roadless area protection to the Tongass National Forest. The lawsuit contends it was illegal to exempt the Tongass from the rule in 2003. Tom Waldo of Earth Justice is one of the attorneys.
We would like the new administration to end the Tongass exemption. We've asked them to do so. We're encouraged by a lot of the things that they're saying. We think they're headed in the right direction. But 6 years is long enough for the uncertainty created by the current temporary rule, and it's time to stop planning new timber sales in roadless areas of the Tongass and adopt a strong permanent protection for those places like the other national forests have.
The Clinton administration barred new road construction on nearly 60 million acres of undeveloped national forest land. The Bush administration then exempted the Tongass 2 years later. One of the plaintiffs in the suit is the boat company, which offers small ship week-long cruises out of Juneau and Sitka during the summertime. Vice President Hunter McIntosh says the boat company wants to protect uncut coves and anchorages for its customers. McIntosh says visitors notice the impacts of logging.
When you're cruising in such a pristine waterway, and all of a sudden all the trees have been cut down and the side of the mountain's been left for nothing, it's really a travesty. And our clients definitely see that and they get it. We don't force it on them. All we have to do is cruise by a clear cut, and the evidence is blaring.
Another plaintiff, the organized Village of Cake, wants to protect customary and traditional hunting, fishing, and gathering areas. So far, the Obama administration is taking a different approach to roadless. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack this year temporarily took over decision-making on roadless projects. That directive has required an additional level of clearance, but has not entirely halted projects in roadless areas. Vilsack approved one roadless sale, Orion North, back in July, but that offering is facing a legal challenge as well. The U.S. Forest Service is not ready to comment on the suit yet. Alaska Forest Association Executive Director Owen Graham says roadless protection would mean the end of the timber industry in Southeast.
Well, just looking at the forest plan, the Forest Service only has scheduled 2% of the roadless areas for timber harvest over the next 100 years. But that 2% represents 2/3 of our timber supply, you know, so it'd be a wipe out. We already don't have enough timber. If we wipe out 2/3 of it, then we have nothing. And why the environmental groups insist on getting the last 2% is beyond me, but that's what's going on.
Graham says he'd like the industry group to intervene in the lawsuit if possible. Leaders in the U.S. Senate announced today that they'll vote on a health care bill early Christmas Eve day. The vote is now scheduled for 8 a.m. Washington time instead of late that night. The bump up in timing is giving Alaska senators hope they'll make it home for the holiday. Senator Lisa Murkowski said today she's aiming to fly out of Washington mid-Thursday. Murkowski and the Senate's other 39 Republicans are still battling tooth and nail against the health care bill Democrats are advancing this week. As APRN's Libby Casey reports, even though it includes some elements Murkowski has long fought for, she says the overall bill is bad for Alaska.
Lisa Murkowski is one of the Senate's biggest Republican champions for improving Alaska Native and Native American health care. She's fought to reauthorize the Indian Health Service, something that hasn't been done in 20 years. And she's worked across party lines on issues like getting more long-term care options in rural Alaska and funding Native youth suicide prevention programs. Now the Indian Health Care Improvement Act is part of the larger health care bill on the table this week. It puts Murkowski in a tough spot. She'll vote against the overall bill, even though it includes something she's championed.
I have been the prime co-sponsor with Senator Dorgan to advance Indian health care reform. I still absolutely support all that is contained within it. My concern, of course, has been you roll that into a package like this health care reform bill, which I simply cannot support the underlying bill. It certainly complicates the issue for me.
Murkowski calls her support for Indian health care reform unwavering, as is her longtime support for preventative care measures that are now in the Democrats' bill. And she does like some of its insurance reforms.
I have said all throughout what we need to be working on is ensuring that we don't cut off those with pre-existing conditions. That is a piece that is included within the bill.
Murkowski has also long supported the National Health Service Corps, whose providers work in parts of the country with doctor shortages. The Democrats' bill would bump up their loan repayments.
I have been working on increasing funding for National Health Service Corps since I've been back here. In fact, I've been recognized for my work in doing just that. It's an important piece, certainly, to attract more providers to the state, but I think we need to appreciate that that's really long-term.
Murkowski says that's not enough to tackle the huge and immediate problem of getting more doctors in Alaska to take Medicare patients.
One of the provisions that is being touted is all of these free screenings for seniors. You can get your colonoscopy, you can do all this. That's great. It is important. But how good is it if you can't get in to see the doctor who will give you the colonoscopy? And that's where we really haven't figured out how to address the meat of the Medicare issue.
Some of Murkowski's ideas to fix the Medicare reimbursement problem were scuttled by Democrats and did not end up in the final bill. She wanted to allow patients 65 and older to purchase private insurance rather than have Medicare as their primary insurer. And she wanted to find a way to make up the difference between what Medicare pays providers and what private insurance pays. Murkowski and her fellow Republicans talked to reporters Tuesday about their dislike of the overall bill. She says it's not just her caucus that disapproves. Murkowski says while feedback from voters usually tapers off as the holidays near, this year is an exception.
In my office, the number of calls, the number of faxes, the number of emails from constituents saying, "What in the world's going on?" has just gone through the roof. And we thought that the opposition to this legislation was overwhelming a month or so ago. It seems that with every day, and my colleagues have each mentioned this, as they learn more, the people in the state of Alaska are saying, "What do you do? This isn't working."
Murkowski says the legislation will cost Americans more and won't increase their access to health care. But despite her concerns, Democrats get closer every day to passing their health care bill. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, fallout from the alcohol vote in Bethel.
He said that there has been a huge increase in inebriated or intoxicated people walking around the community.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. A fisheries degree prepares you for a career in fisheries biology, management, business or policy, and more. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish, the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
A new study of the gas reserves potential in Cook Inlet seeks to quell some of the concerns consumers have about South Central Alaska running out of gas. Department of Natural Resources Division of Oil and Gas Director Kevin Banks says in the past, DNR has published a simple decline curve analysis that shows gas supplies dropping off quickly without new investment. But he says that was oversimplified. So for the first time, the division undertook a comprehensive engineering study of existing production, as well as examining the geologic potential of Cook Inlet fields. Banks says looking at the 28 existing fields, there is another 1.1 trillion feet of gas that can be produced.
In addition to that amount, the potential for gas development from at least just four of the largest fields, that in fact the reserve potential could be as much as 1.8 trillion cubic feet of gas could be produced in the Cook Inlet. And that would be enough gas to supply domestic needs through the next decade and beyond.
Banks says this means consumers relying on Cook Inlet gas don't need to panic, but there is no time to waste in looking at ways to coax more from existing fields. He says the state had been underestimating the inlet's gas potential in the past. It was not looking at investment in current fields and the potential of drilling more wells beyond existing ones. He says this report looks at those possibilities and makes a more accurate estimate.
A fairly conservative one, I might add, but a careful look at those kinds of geological potential, which I'm sure the oil and gas companies here in the Cook Inlet have done themselves, but something that's never been done by a public agency for the consumption of decision makers here in the state.
Banks says the information may trigger state discussions on incentives for more gas drilling, but the market has to be there. He points out that when companies looking for oil found large gas reserves in Cook Inlet, they pursued strategies for selling more of it beyond the small demand of South Central, such as fertilizer production and shipping to Japan. While there may be more than a trillion cubic feet of gas still in Cook Inlet, Banks says pressure in existing wells is dropping off, which makes it more expensive to produce. Now the industry needs to look at areas that were not as attractive in the past.
So in each of those situations, more investment's going to be required. I think we can expect that, while we're not running out of gas, we may well be running out of cheap gas in the Cook Inlet.
Banks says the engineering study looked at all 28 fields, but the geologic analysis was on only the four largest fields, Beluga River, North Cook Inlet, Ninilchik, and the MacArthur River Grayling gas sands. Banks says knowing there is more gas than previously understood means a more thoughtful approach can be taken to develop alternatives such as hydro, wind, and coal. He says conservation is another area that helps slow the depletion of gas reserves.
People are reporting that using the funding from the Housing Corporation here has led to fairly dramatic savings in heating costs. And so, quite frankly, I think conservation is an alternative source of energy that we should not ignore.
Banks says it's difficult to compare these trillions-plus estimates against past numbers because the state only looked at a decline curve scenario that became known as the waterfall chart because it appeared gas would run out almost immediately. But he says that's not the case, in part because the fields have probably never produced at a maximum rate.
Because they've always been kind of choked off in order to meet the local demand and not to exceed it. And that there was clearly more gas in those wells than we had ever had given credit for. So we were basically being way too conservative. I think we did a disservice to the public by not taking a more careful look. And that's what we've done now in this report.
Factors such as working around critical habitat requirements for Cook Inlet belugas and exploration wells that may fail could add unknown expense, but Banks says he doesn't want to overestimate that type of cost.
Because there's still rank exploration occurring, too. I mean, people are drilling into places that are more like an exploration play. And who knows, those could become very prolific if somebody hits a good field. That's still a possibility.
Bank says there is also potential in the Kenai Peninsula and in the Kenai Wildlife Refuge, where Marathon will drill east of the Swanson River on Cook Inlet Native Regional Corporation land this coming year. The report is online. Links are at our website, aprn.org. Alcohol abuse is on the rise in villages surrounding the city of Bethel. Local law enforcement officers say booze is flooding their communities since Bethel voters revoked local option. From member station KYUK in Bethel, Shane Iverson reports.
Village Public Safety Officer Coordinator Alvin Jimmy is hearing the same thing from officers all over the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta.
The calls for service has highly increased, where the VPSOs and the VPOs and the TPOs are receiving numerous calls for assistance alcohol-related.
Alaska State Trooper Perry Barr says the recent uptick is easy to identify.
Within just the past few weeks, since the unlimited amount of alcohol is allowed within Bethel,
law enforcement officers began to notice the disturbing trend after the city of Bethel revoked its status as DAMP and became an unrestricted community. With that change, Bethel residents are now able to order or import unlimited amounts of alcohol, a big change from the limit of 14 bottles of liquor per month that was set under local option laws. With no limits, bootleggers can import additional product and distribute it in dry villages surrounding the city. Barr and Jimmy spent the week touring YK Delta villages to get firsthand reports. Barr describes a conversation he had with a village officer working in Akiak.
He said that there has been a huge increase in inebriated or intoxicated people walking around the community, and it's almost on a daily basis versus what he had seen in the past, which was just occasionally he would see those inebriates or intoxicated people.
Barr says the troopers don't yet have statistics on how much more alcohol may be making it into the villages, but he saw some evidence of the changes firsthand.
We conducted a investigation and ended up seizing a can of beer and an empty can of beer. You know, and that is not usual. That's not what we usually would typically find in a dry community. Beer. It would normally be a bottle of R&R, or it would be a bottle of Gilvey's, or it would be some spirits versus beer.
The Tundra Village of New Napachuk is located about 20 miles west of Bethel. There, Village Police Officer Roman Daniel says he's also seen some unusual alcohol containers in his village.
Instead of just the regular 750 milliliter bottles, we're finding like half gallons of whiskey.
Daniel says one of the most disturbing changes he's seen is more alcohol getting into the hands of more underage residents.
There's been a rise on that with more minors that are actually selling alcohol. And it's like it's more available to them all of a sudden. They're coming in with more and more alcohol every day.
Daniel says that violence and other dangerous behavior is on the rise as a result of the increased availability of illegally imported alcohol.
And generally, assaults have risen. The assault levels, the assault cases, they seem to rise more. DUIs have gotten several of them just within the last week.
VPSO Coordinator Alvin Jimmy says the workload on tribal and village officers is increasing all over the YK Delta, and the closer connected they are to Bethel, the worse the situation appears to be getting.
They're receiving more calls for service and making arrests for medevacs twice higher than last year since local option lifted here in Bethel, and more individuals per community. There's more protective custodies that are being taken right now within each village.
In New Napachuk, Daniel is paid to work 6 hours each day, but the calls are nonstop, and he's been putting in 12-hour days most of the week. He says that's beginning to take a toll.
It's been stressful because, I have a nine-month-old baby girl now, and just not being able to spend time with her. I mean, it's getting to the point where, you know, she calls me, instead of just daddy, it's bye-bye daddy, because I'm leaving at all hours of the night.
Jimmy says he's seen signs of fatigue in many of his officers. He says most officers will respond to a call for help even when they're not getting paid.
That's why these guys are getting burned up.
Jimmy is trying to recruit additional officers into the VPSO program, But in the meantime, he's trying to hold on to the ones he has by encouraging them to travel into Bethel for their days off. But that means somewhere, a call for help may go unheard. I'm Shane Iverson.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by AlaskaDispatch.com, reporting from across the state using multimedia and citizen journalism online to tell the story of our state. Find your Alaskan news at AlaskaDispatch.com. The Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance has a simple request. If you smoke, take it outside. Smoking hurts more than just you. Secondhand smoke increases the risk of coronary heart disease and kills nearly 50,000 non-smoking Americans every year. Smoking around your kids causes chronic and life-threatening diseases and is linked to sudden infant death syndrome. So if you choose to smoke, make a choice that protects others who don't. Take it outside. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
Sarah Palin's fans lined up by the hundreds in Wasilla today to get their copies of Going Rogue signed. As Ellen Lockyer reports, Palin greeted each person with a warm smile, but she had a cold shoulder for the press.
About 1,000 people packed the Curtis Menard Sports Complex in Wasilla today, all of them holding at least one copy of Palin's memoir, Going Rogue. Christmas carols blared through loudspeakers while Palin's supporters waited patiently, lined up like school kids in the indoor soccer field, waiting for the moment when Palin herself would autograph each volume's flyleaf. It meant a long wait, but no one seemed to mind.
I'm pleased to be standing in line to have Sarah Palin sign my book. I think she's the most wonderful person.
That's Carol Ruby. Promptly at 11, Palin appeared dressed in her signature color, this time red satin. She looked relaxed as she signed books one by one, giving each person a greeting.
I'm so glad you're here. I hope it gets colder.
The media, however, was relegated to a small space along the wall, several feet from Palin's book signing table.
Press?
Yeah.
Run up, pull it all the way around.
Palin made no move to speak with the press. Reporters were allotted less than 10 minutes to get video or sound, then ushered out.
5 minutes? 5 minutes?
That's what I have on my...
Other than that snub, the event had a festive feel, complete with free Christmas cookies. Many, if not most, of the fans brought multiple copies of Going Rogue along.
I have 7 books I'm going to try to have her sign for my family, my sister and brother and my kids and my best friend and me. I'm going to keep one, yes. Oh, yes, for me.
That's Chris. She didn't give her last name. Bill Lyons had Christmas gifts in mind.
Yeah, I'm going to send some to family down south.
Are you a big Sarah Palin supporter?
She's the man.
Books were for sale in one corner of the indoor soccer field. Craig Ness toted 3 with him.
Well, I'm a fan of Sarah Palin. And she exemplifies what I like about America, and she's old school as far as that goes. And she likes our military. Yeah, they're all going outside.
Security was light, the crowd was orderly, and Wasilla Mayor Vern Ruprecht said things couldn't have gone more smoothly.
It's perfect to have Sarah home for the holidays with her family. She's the hometown girl, and for her to end up her book tour doing a signing here in Wasilla, couldn't ask for anything better. I'm glad that she did it, and I've already thanked Todd and Sarah for being so great.
By 1 p.m., the crowd was down to about half, although a few people were still arriving at the sports complex, anxious to make contact, however briefly, with Wasilla's most celebrated daughter. They may not get that close again. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
When David Grisso moved to Aniak 3 years ago, one of the first things he did was build a steam house. The Spaniard converted an old shed on his property to a steam bath by lining the walls with the rough cedar boards he recycled from wooden pallets. He installed a wood-burning stove covered in rocks, a shelf for candles, and one bench. Now, taking a steam bath is a regular ritual, by himself, with his family, or with friends. APRN's Annie Fite caught up with him as he built a fire in the steam bath for a series on what life is like in Aniak.
We
remember the first time I had a steam in Bethel. I mean, they always try to cook you off. And I was, my skin was purple for 4 hours. I couldn't breathe. I had to cover my ears.
So you're making kindling?
Hmm? Yeah. Okay. Usually what I do is I boil tandra tea.
And what's
then,
that?
Labrador tea. Have you? Grows in the tundra. I'll show you. And people use it for colds and hangover. But tundra tea smells really, really good. So, okay, I think this will be enough. So.
Did you do steams before you came here?
No, I can't live with them. It's just, yeah, they're the best, really. Around here, notice is the most approximate thing to meditation. Because I think it's because you get a point where it's so hot that you can't think about anything else. It's just so overwhelming, the heat. Yeah, first you start talking and you talk and you talk and you talk. At least, you know, when I've been doing them with other people, it gets really, really, really hot. And then you can't talk anymore. And they think it's kind of a macho thing. Where you're like, how much can I stand? And nobody wants to be the first one to come out. But as soon as you start coming out, everybody comes out.
David Grisso is executive director of the Kuskokwim Watershed Council and a lover of steam baths. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Joe Vicknicki in Petersburg, Shane Iverson in Bethel, and Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., Steve Heimel from Anchorage, and Annie Fite from ENIAC. Our audio engineers are Dave Waldron and Kristen Spack, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Alaska Communication Systems, connecting your business and employees to the world through their high-capacity data network. Bandwidth speeds up to 1,000 megabits per second. ACSAlaska.com. The Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association was created by the legislature to provide insurance coverage for Alaskans who may feel they have become uninsurable. It offers hope to people with certain high-risk chronic illnesses or those who have exhausted employer-based insurance, and to some under 65-year-olds who are Medicare eligible. Find out more. Ask an insurance broker about ACHIA. More information at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. What would you do with an extra $56 a week? Well, that's how much you're spending if you smoke one pack of cigarettes a day. At $8 a pack, that's $240 a month, $3,000 a year. Think about it, and think about quitting. The Alaska Tobacco Quit Line can help. A trained quit coach is waiting for your call. The Alaska Tobacco Quit Line, 1-888-842-7848. It's free, and it works. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Quit Line.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.